turn is being more embracing of the world around us. Part of that turn is much more empirical and much more rational. But if you turn the clock back 150 years, 160 years, not just 150 years, people are still learning this. This is what people were learning, and this is how they view Torah. And I hope that some of this will alter your view of Torah. Like I said, it's not an all or nothing. It's not like you either buy into everything the Nefesh HaChaim says and make that your identity, or you reject it all. What does this mean to me? How does this change my view of Torah? What larger worlds am I part of? Levi, just want to close the door? Okay. So, Perek Yud. Okay, I don't know why we're the first two. I must have sent them by accident. But Perek Yud is on the second page. Okay, Perek Yud. We've talked about the centrality of Talmud Torah. We've talked in particular about the dynamic between Torah as content and learning Musar and Yerushalayim as framework, preserver, silo, protective agent. So, Vigam, here in the middle of Perek Yud, is where it shits. Perek Yud, right column, page 99. Good number for Kabbalah. We're heading to a whole new series of numbers. Page 99, there's a shift to Kabbalah. Vigam. Ki Sharsha Ha'elyon. I'm trying to make it as logical and as staged. I'll try to briskerize this lambdas for you. Make it clear, straight, step by step. Step number one. What's happening up there? Forget about you. Forget about me. What's happening up there? Step two is going to be, what happened when the world was created? Step three is, what happens day to day based on how the world was created? Step four is, what role does Mordechai Shmuelor and Boaz Kapitanker have in that whole process? Okay, so we'll try to break it down into four steps. Step one, what's happening up there? Forget before the world was created. Step two is, how was the world created? Step three was, December 12th, 1692, what was happening to the world? Part four is, now it's December 7th, 2021, whatever, Tafshin Pei Beis, how can you be part of that cosmic drama? Okay, so let's go step by step. Step number one, Gam, ki sharsha ha'elyon shel Torah kedosha, hu be'elyon sheba'olamos hanikram olamos ha'insof. Very, very simple, Kabbalah 101, Kabbalah for dummies, without getting deeply involved. There are four worlds. Remember the acronym, Beis, Yud, Ayin, Abia, Atzilus, Bria, Yetzira, Asiya. We occupy one small, bottommost part of the world of Asiya. That's where we live. Our whole universe is one small little segment of that world of Asiya. On top, of course, is the Kodesh Baruch Hu. This is just an approximation because we can't put Hashem's presence into anything visual or anything dimensional or anything time or place, but the Ein Self is the infinity of Hashem. So Kodesh Baruch Hu in Kabbalah is called the Ein Self, the infinity. And in between those two, remember, each of these worlds is a secretion or expression or hafrasha, part of the previous world. In between, the Ein Sof, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the closest, there's actually a little world in between, but for our purposes, this is where Torah resides. It is the intermediator between the Ein Sof and the beginning of the expression of those worlds. Let's read it inside. Kisharsha ha'elyon, not necessarily the Torah that you read, because there's only one version of the Torah, right? Famous question. Ramban says, "Kol ha'Torah kula shemosav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu." The entire Torah is Hashem's name. Wait a second. I know words in the Torah that aren't Hashem's name. Paro, Mitzrayim, Avodah Zarah, whatever, Elilim. Oh, you think that's the entire Torah? The Torah that you have? You know how many Torahs there are? Millions and millions of ways to combine those letters and to make them mean many, many things, but we weren't privy to those. Moshe gave us a specific version of the Torah, and that's the version that we learn, that we study, that we understand. That's why we can't have half a pasuk. The Gemara says, "Kol psukei de la pasukei Moshe." Whatever psukei Moshe gave us, that's where we start. We learn, we study, but you can combine those psukei many, many, many different ways. But that's not the Torah we learn. So the Sharsha Elyon means not necessarily what's on your svarim shelf, but the higher abstract combination of Torah's logic. That occupies a space in between the Ein Self and between all the other four worlds. Okay? So I'm just obviously excerpting for you. I'll try to give you a pasuk here or there because there's a lot of proofs. Every point he makes is three or four proofs from Sukkim, from Midrashim, a lot from Zohar. Kimosha Kasav Hashem Kanani Reishis Darko Kodem Mif'alav Me'az. Kodem Mif'alav. It's before any of the Mif'alav. These worlds are the Mif'alav. So Kodim is not just chronological, that Torah existed before the world, Torah Kadma Li'olam, which of course it did, but it's also axiological. In the universe, it occupies a space that comes prior to the expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in lower worlds. So Torah Kadma Li'olam is not just a chronological statement, it is also a, what you call, functional or positional statement. What position in the universe Torah occupies? Now, we talked about in Kabbalah, the lower worlds come from higher worlds. Higher worlds are more abstract, lower worlds are more physical. That's called Hishtalshulut, and the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu streams through those four worlds. So if Torah is the highermost world, here's the punchline, right column, one of the punchlines of today, page 99, three lines from the bottom, V'lachein ba'ne'etzlu, come the word atzilus. Atzilus means, it's a form of Hishtalshulut, but it's less physical, it was inspired, it merged. Neltsu v'nivru kol olamos ha'alyonim v'tachtonim. Torah was responsible for all of reality, obviously aside from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it's such an immediate and ethereal and direct expression of Hashem that all reality that comes from Hashem basically can be found in Torah. Now he's going to explain how that happened. So now it's 1b, not just the description in theory, but what happened 5,782 years ago when Hashem created this world. Okay, so an important phrase. Come on, guys, let's wake up a little bit. Even that non-Mekubalim, no. One of the important phrases in Zohar is Histakel. Can anyone finish the line? Histakel. Bi'araisa ubara alma. Hashem looked in the Torah and created the world because the Torah preceded the world. Now, what non-Mekubalim, I always want you to be able to understand the difference between Kabbalah and non-Kabbalah, because otherwise it just becomes one mishmash. Non-Mekubalim will say that the concentrated, systemic logic of the Torah is reflected in this world. So we all believe that if I just study Torah well enough, I could achieve knowledge in biology, knowledge in chemistry, knowledge in physics, knowledge in music, knowledge in certainly the hard science. Not just hard science, it's certainly Masi Bria. Would I be able to get to Shakespeare? Probably not. But I'd be able to get to everything in this Bria, because everything in this Bria comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will, and Hashem's will is condensed in the Torah. So it's almost you can't argue the statement. Once you accept Torah as Hashem's will, everything in this world is Hashem's will, so everything can be found in the Torah, which is the anti-Torah Mahdi position. Why are you wasting your time reading physics and biology when you should be learning the only work that's prior to all of them? The pro people, those who suggest that you learn, if you're the Vilna Gaon, you can study Torah and know it well enough to get everything. But if you're not the Vilna Gaon and you believe that it's important to study biology and physics, you may argue the point, it's not important for me to study those. But if I do want to study biology and physics, then I have to read the direct works that speak about it rather than trying to find it coded in Torah. But that's the non-Mekubal approach to this. The non-Mekubal approach to this, leave it for later. The non-Mekubal approach to this is that there's logic, just like if I give you a playbook and you want to play football. Here are some guys talking about the football game. Let's say, not that anyone here is tired because of that. But let's say you wanted to understand the football game and you took a sketchbook so you'd have the playbook. So the playbook for the world is the Torah, but not in Kabbalah. In Kabbalah, you know how the world was created? Through speech. Asar mamar nivra olam. Speech in Kabbalah is really important. By the way, those of you who want to find the overlay between Kabbalah and speech, we've now discovered that DNA is just a combination of letters. So the whole world is built on DNA. So it's a combination of letters being conjugated differently. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Yehi Or, Yehi Choshech, Yehi Rakia. Okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said it based on his logic, based on his Chachma. No, Histakel Be'araisa means, whatever this is meant to mean in Kabbalah, I can't explain it to you, Hashem looked at a Torah and said, Yehi Or. And the word in the Torah, because Torah is up at that higher perch, actually created light. Because anything higher up on the food chain, on the Kabbalistic food chain, can create lower worlds. So now let's see. Ve'inyan, left column, ki Torah kedosha, hi dibur yisbarach. Torah is Hashem's speech. Uvamarmar piv yisbarach, b'maisa b'reishis. Mem ayin beis is maisa b'reishis. B'maisa, this occurs a lot in the Nefesh Haim. B'maisa b'reishis, nivru ha'olamos kulam. Neltsu, line number 6, v'nivru ho'lamos elyonu elyonim. This is where it gets very poetic. There's a lot of poetry in the Nefesh HaChayim, so it's just nice to read. And again, I recommend that you just, my strong recommendation is, if you want to give yourself a bump in Talmud Torah, try to learn some Nefesh HaChayim over the next month. It's a good time of the year. You're getting involved in Talmud Torah and Hasmada. You want to give yourself a big bump, sit down with your chavrusa 10 minutes before night seder and read one small parak every night of the Nefesh HaChayim. There's versions in English. I can recommend a version in English. It's just a nice saver. Now that you know what it means, read it slowly. Neltsu V'nivru halamos elyone elyonim ribe rivavan. Elyomos elyonim means higher, ribe rivavan, tens of thousands of worlds. B'chol sidre matzavam, their entire structure. U'pirtei inyanam, in their details. V'chol anichlel bahem. V'chein b'chol mamor mamor shebo. Nivru kol pirtei aminim v'nyanim. Every single detail of this world, the smallest gnat, the smallest fruit fly, the smallest amoeba, the smallest paramecium, was created from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's speech. What's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's speech? His Torah. Keep Kadboy HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'm skipping a couple lines to the next underlying part. Lemivri Alma, when Hashem wanted, this is from the Zohar, to create the world. Havim Mistakil Baber Isi, looked in the Torah. B'chol Mila V'mila, he looked at every word. The Avid LeKabbalah Umnasa, and he used that to create his work. Okay? I'm skipping two lines where it's not underlined. The line begins with the word Inun. Bereisiksev, Bereishis Bar Elokim. Tari writes the word Bereishis Bar Elokim. Istakel Bahaimil, Hashem looked at that word, Ubaris Hashem, whatever that means. Hashem looked at the word in his upper Torah and said, Bereishis Bar Elokim Es Hashamayim? That created the Shemayim. The Es Haaretz? That created the Haaretz. Yior? That created the Or. V'lachain, now this last underline in this section, Kol HaTorah Bechlal, V'chol olamos klaleim uprateim b'sidurim v'chol inyoneim kulam klulim v'remuzim v'eser mamaros d'maisa b'reishis. Okay, so that is step one. Step one is, one second, Torah is placed in the cosmos, and relatedly, Torah's function during maisa b'reishis. If you turn back the clock, let's say you got a front row seat, a Kabbalistic seat, and you'd be watching how the world was created, whatever that means, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would be looking at the Torah, saying he or, that's his speech, and Torah would be creating maisa b'reishis. Now the question is, what does that mean on a day-to-day basis? Is it a one-time event, and then Torah goes its way, and Maisa Bereishis goes its way? Or it's a continual dynamic in which Torah, in its perch, continues to affect the world. You obviously know the answer to that, but this is the next stage. I just want you to be able to see it in stages. 5,722 years ago, Hashem created the world through Torah. Now what happens today? Yes, Mordechai.
Yeah, but how does Torah mean or?
I don't know. Not for right now. I can recommend a good version of Nem Shachayim. I'm trying to make this as digestible as possible. Okay? No, seriously. If let's say we turn the clock back 400 years or 600 years and you're sitting in the base medrash of the Ramah, or the base medrash of the Ramban, or any one of the people you're lording, there's a Seder called a Kabbalah Seder. And you're not levitating, you're not talking to bears, you're not walking in the woods, you're not walking on water, you're sitting in front of a sefer, and your Rebbe is describing all these things to you the same way I describe Mordechai Mitzvahs. I don't have that background. I don't know enough to describe it. I can show you the sefer. I'm trying to give you what I know and what I feel right now is a good framework for you to make sense out of something that, quite frankly, if you're being honest with yourself, you always sneered at, and you always say, oh, it's Kabbalah, yeah, it's Amalamas Leonim, I can't see it because science can't understand it. I hope you know how humiliating such a statement is to yourself. Like, you know, science is a be-all and end-all. Yeah, right. Good luck with that. Okay, let's move on. Question, a story. Okay. V'lachein amr b'zohar, d'oraisa. Okay. Ha'inyan, last line on page 99, left column. Ha'inyan, ki ho'lamos holchim al seder hishtalshulos. That's a doctrine of Kabbalah. Hishtalshulos means shekol olam. This is a nice thesis for understanding Kabbalah. Top of page 100. Shekol olam hayoter elyon v'gavoa, hu nishmaso v'chiyuso v'kiyumo v'oro shel olam shetachta. Again, Mordechai, a lot of these words are metaphors. A lot of Kabbalah's metaphors we saw in the Tanya. Every upper world is four metaphors. Nishmaso, chiyuso, kiyumo, v'oro shel olam shetachta v'levad. That just means in our clear language, not Kabbalistic metaphors, that lower worlds are sustained and nourished and kept alive and perpetuated by upper worlds. So there's the stream of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. That stream is necessary, Hashem's essence. That stream is necessary to support life and reality. That stream filters down and trickles down through the worlds. So that means that upper worlds that are more abstract and more concentrated affect lower worlds. V'lachein, next underline. Okay, here's what's happening throughout history. HaTorah, HaKadosha, Shesharsha HaElyon HaNelam. It's upper position, which is Nelam. You can't see that Torah. You can just see Bava Metzia. You can just see the Pesukim. You can just see the Sefer Zohar. You can't understand Torah Shesharsha HaElyon. But it's HaNelam. Hu Lamaila Maila Gam MiAtzilus. It's above the world of Atzilus. It's above that upper world of Atzilus. Kiddusha. V'Kadosh Baruch Hu V'Araisa Kul Echad. Hashem, another phrase, right? Maybe if you want to take three phrases from the Zohar. The three most famous phrases from the Zohar are Las Machshava de Tfisa Be, in sequence. Let's machshava the tvisa axiological sequence. Let's machshava the tvisa beklal. Human beings can't understand. I remember we talked about the word toughest in Tanya. Number two is Hakadosh Baruch Hu v'yarei sechadu. Hashem and the Torah are one. And the third is therefore sakal v'yarei sebar alma. Okay, there's a sequence. Can't understand Hashem. Torah is the closest approximation. Since it's the closest approximation, the world comes from Torah. Sakal v'yarei se ubar alma. So if you take those three phrases, Hakadosh Baruch Hu v'yarei sekul achad. So therefore, Torah is hi anefesh v'achius. Vinihiru, Nahar, Visharsha, Nahar is an important metaphor in Kabbalah because it's a stream, Visharsha da'almin kula. Okay, so this is part 1A, or 1A and 1B. 1A is that Torah is this upper world. 1B is that Torah was functionally the tools of Maaseh Bereishis. 1C is, therefore, since Torah still occupies that perch, so all of reality streams from Torah. Yoni.
Bit of like trouble understanding like the concept of Torah is created before creation. Like, it's like, first of all, like, Torah is like most of Torah is stuff that is in this world.
Whoa. Answer your question.
No, like Hashem wrote it beforehand.
Really. Whoa. No. You're looking at one small, itsy bitsy, teeny weeny part of Torah. The Torah that Hashem gave you, about avadim and marriage and staka and bodies and hair and nazir. Torah is a system of logic that represents the Kodesh Baruch Hu's infinite system. The letters themselves contain all those logic, but those letters, how many permutations can you make of Torah? Right. So the Torah, the version that you had, that little version may not, and still, you could still say Kodesh Baruch Hu wrote it before, but even if you say that version was only written, but Torah is this larger than life logical system. That doesn't limit itself to Migo or Migo mushrooms.
Right.
Okay. Okay. So now the question is, okay, so it's really good. Now I understand the cosmos. But what does it mean for a bachur sitting in Voloshin? I understand how the cosmos works. I understand what happened during my superstitious. I mean how creation happened cosmologically. But what does it mean for me? Perik Yud Aleph. Vilazos. Ikur chiyusam bi'aram v'kiyumam shelolamos kulam al nachon. The sustaining of the world. Who rakishanachnu oskim bakaroi? When we study Torah, so we are creating more of a Torah, use whatever metaphor you want, energy, stream, flow, activation. That means all the world is being sustained by your learning Torah properly today. And it's not just logically, oh, that I'm the person who's studying Torah. Shekol echad misrael, line 4, sharish nishmaso helyona medubak vinechas biosachas meatara. Because there's another part of that duality that's integrated. HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'yaraisa chadhu. But what else does the Zohar say? HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'yaraisa v'yisrael chadhu. That you are part of Torah. And we saw this in the Tanya. This is where the overlap between you have part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's essence in you. And one of the metaphors for that, again, I'm using the word metaphor to give it meaning in your terminology. One of the metaphors with that is that every Jew has a letter in the Torah, so there are 600,000 letters in the Torah, which is obviously not true, but in a different way. So every Jew has a letter in the Torah that represents them. So it's not just that, oh, by the way, Torah is really important, please come study Torah, so someone will be studying Torah. But since we were created from Torah, when we study Torah, we are amplifying Torah, and by amplifying Torah, the stream becomes more powerful, and the stream becomes more powerful, the world becomes more sustained. And he quotes all the Gemaras, be Rashis Bar Elokim, Bishvil Yisrael Shenikra Rashis. And the other matter says Bishvil Torah Shenikra Rashis. So how do you dash in Rashis Bar Elokim, Bishvil Torah, Bishvil Yisrael? That's the same thing. Bishvil Torah, Bishvil Yisrael, Bishvil a part of Torah. Now again, this is really interesting. And if you think about it, it's really fascinating. This sounds very particularistic and very nationalistic and very, very parochial, but in many ways it's very universalistic. Why? Because on the one hand, the Jews have a special status because we're created from Torah. On the other hand, our special status is not for privilege. Our special status is because everything is resting on our shoulders. So if you learn a Black Gemara today, not only will hunger be alleviated in Kenya, but in some world that you can't even imagine, the world is going to be altered. So your little Black Gemara today is having not just international impact, but cosmological impact. And you have a responsibility. It creates great responsibility. You know, the righteous say, oh, Bishul Yisrael, we're the chosen people, and therefore let's just luxuriate in our own chosenness. No, to be chosen means you're chosen to be part of that system that is responsible for all of reality. That creates great responsibility, which we'll talk about in a moment. Okay? And because of that, one second, Barak, because of that, the world was like this. I call it the Jell-O effect. Until people were studying Torah, the world was shimmying like Jell-O, like your grandmother's sponge cake, you know, shakes a little. It was just unstable. Because Torah wanted to stream through the world, through this entire system, but there was no one to study Torah. So the stream, imagine an electrical circuit, the stream wasn't being completed. There was no streaming of Torah down to Am Yisrael. Right? Think about, we believe that everything in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world is reflective. So Kabbalah can be better understood because of electric current. Electric current needs a cycle. Without a cycle, it doesn't flow. Some things, in order to flow, needs to be a circuit. So the circuit of Kabbalah was disconnected, was short-circuited, until someone actually, until Am Yisrael accepted the Torah. So let's read that. Okay, v'lo nishtal shalat smusa mamish. It's on the left column of page 100. Lo nishtal shalat smusa mamish lamata lezeh olam shiseska bo kibitzi mata. Until there was a full nishtal shalat, and it reached the bottom stage, adayin hayu halamas rofifim verotzim. Rofifim verotzim means shaking and shimmying and unstable. V'lo hayu al mechonim hamiti. And the world was not yet fully developed. And that's why Chazal say the first 2,000 years of the Torah, what year in history was the Torah given? Basics? 2448. So the first 2,000 years of history, Chazal say, bet alafim, 2,000 years, tohu. So again, we think in non-Kabbalistic terms, bet alafim tohu means for 2,000 years there was intellectual darkness, cultural darkness, theological darkness, until the Jews brought light by accepting monotheism. But in Kabbalah, bet alafim tohu means the world was tohu vavohu. Whatever Hashem created in Ma'aseh Bereishis was still in danger of folding in on itself, like a black hole. The world's going to fold in on itself because this entire network that sustains reality was yet to be completed. The circuit was yet to be completed. And by accepting the Torah, we completed the circuit, and the world will stabilize. Umeyaz, just for a second, Barak, left column, page 100, on the bottom. Umeyaz shenishtal shel v'yarda kivayachal mimkor shor shanelem lezeh olam. Once the Torah came from its uppermost tier, uppermost station, and became expressed by people learning and applying Torah, line number 4 from the bottom, this is really important, I'll get to your question in a minute. Kol chiyusam v'kiyumam shel kol ha'lamos hurak ha'idei hevel pinu. The entire cosmos is being sustained by Torah. Ve'emes, and here's the punchline probably of the whole Nefesh HaChaim, and I believe deeply in this punchline. I'll tell you how they applied it in V'lashon and how I believe in it, but I don't think this is untrue. I believe this to be fully authentic. Authentic, correct, accurate. V'emes b'li shum safek klal. Sh'im haya olam kula mikatzeu ve'ad katzeu, panui, the end of 100. If the world will be empty of Torah, chas v'shalom af rega, me'eisek v'zbarun v'shalom b'tarah, if there'd be 1 minute the Torah isn't being studied, hayu nechrevim kol olam asaliyarim. You'd be pulling the plug. When you pull the plug, everything would go dark. Because the energy of the world is being provided by Torah. If you pull the plug, there's no energy. Now, how is this applied in V'lashon? You know the famous story in V'lashon. They would hand out shifts. Because we in V'lashon are responsible for the sustaining of the universe, of the cosmos. And if there's 1 minute the Torahs are being studied, the world collapses. So, Yoni, tonight you got the 2-3 shift. That's how you get the 3-4 shift. Okay, Avi, you're new, we'll give you, make it easy, 5-6 shift. Okay, Bragi, 6-7. No. And we took shifts. Which is kind of hard in the Ukrainian winter. With no heating. People took shifts. Now, most of the world doesn't hand out shifts that way, but I truly believe one of two things. I can't tell you what's true because this is a Kabbalah, but I certainly believe that if Torah would cease to be studied or cease to be practiced, then there'd be no expression of that uppermost world, no expression. The circuit's broken, the world goes dark, the cosmos goes dark. Now, does that have to mean Torah study? Could it mean Torah lifestyles? Let's say you're home and you're making a bracha. Let's say you're home and you're being a good husband because it says in the Torah, you have to lechak amacha. Let's say you're a business and you're still living a life of Torah. You're still applying the Torah. In V'lashon, it wasn't just Torah lifestyles, it was Talmud Torah. Okay, so even if I say it's Talmud Torah, learning Hashem's Torah, okay, I can go to sleep tonight. Sorry, you can go to sleep tonight at 5 o'clock because there's a Jew in Hawaii for whom it's morning Seder. And then you can go to sleep in Hawaii because it's a base medicine in Hong Kong. You go to sleep in Hong Kong because, okay, today it's a lot easier to imagine that because the Jews all over the world, Baruch Hashem, learning Tari. You cycle back 700 years. It wasn't so true. Okay. What?
Your time zones.
Well, they always have time zones. But
the world's
called
the Jews spread out.
Right. So, but in Velazquez, I believe in this, and I try to shape my life that way. I believe that my Talmud Torah is a universal mission that's broader than any other pursuit I could be adopting to his breath. Maybe there are things that are equally important in the specifics and have to dedicate time to that. But I believe, do we hand out Yeshiva and Haratzion shifts? No, we don't. But we hand out shifts for Shmirah, right? My son-in-law now was watching us, literally, Yom of Elijah. He can't say, okay, you know what, we'll go to sleep now. We'll let the Arabs just come from El Aruf. There's got to be someone on duty around the clock. And therefore, and with this I'll end, Lachain, line number 4, page 101, Anu mivarchim aleha v'chayolam nata b'socheinu. Chayolam nata b'socheinu. Why is Torah called chayolam? So again, non-mekubal would interpret that bracha. The chayolam means it's eternal. It's the only thing in this world that will outlast this world. Our bodies won't, our food won't, our sports won't, our money won't, but our Torah will. But chayolam in Kabbalah means chayolam, upper worlds. Barak.
The idea of Yisrael is created from Hashem and from Torah. How does that fit with Gira and with the idea that, like, we were chosen last? Like, there were other nations that could have been chosen.
Okay, two separate questions. The other nations could have been chosen question is not a question on Kabbalah. Let's say you eliminate Kabbalah from the whole equation. We're not part of Torah. I mean, we are. But let's say you don't look at it through those lenses, through that prism. Hashem delivered the Torah to me, and we're meant to study and apply Torah. And we're the chosen people, and if Hashem selected us, wait. So if Hashem selected us to receive the Torah, how can we offer it to the Edom? How can you offer it to Ishmaelim? That's not a question on Kabbalah. It's a question about the Medrash. And presumably what the Medrash is saying is that Edom and Yishmael or others would have been selected to receive the Torah, not in place of the Jewish people, but alongside. Torah would have been more immediately available to a broader audience. Our job is to make Hashem's will available, Hashem, Mitzvah, B'nai Noach, moral activity, theology. It would have been available in some way. I don't think Edom would have taken a little of an essay. I don't think Edom, or they may have taken it, but in a slightly different way. But that's not a question on Kabbalah. Geirus is a little bit more of a Kabbalah question, because if you're not looking it through the prism of Kabbalah, there's a chosen people. The chosen people have an experiential, intellectual, emotional mission to study Torah, to apply Torah. And if you buy in, you could join that mission, join the team. Okay? Oh, you're a Geir, come study Torah. Oh, you're a Geir, come. But once it becomes cosmological, and you were created in a certain way, so a Geir wasn't created in that way, so how can you have that role? The answer is, you have to answer that question through Kabbalah, not through empirical. And the answer is in Kabbalah, that person's neshama can join upper stream or HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When you go into the mikvah, you're created anew. Gershin is Gai HaKadosh and Oladami. So at that point, you become connected to the stream. I don't know enough Kabbalah to answer that question, but you'd have to answer that question within, just like within geometry, you can't offer a non-Euclidean geometry answer. That's based on the system. So any system needs internal answers. And I don't have enough knowledge in that system to provide. Mordechai. No, no stories about your friends. Yes.
I'm pretty sure I'm confused, so we said the person was created for the sole purpose of conversion, so it was built with kinder.
Okay. There, Chassidus is one form of Kabbalah. Okay. Here's the final part. This is really interesting, and as I'm reading this morning, I was just reviewing it to myself. It is interesting. My senses, you can correct me or not, my sense is the Torah world, at least in your world, I'm not talking about me, I'm not talking about Laker, but I think it's true in those worlds also, has changed a little bit. There's less of a, let me put it this way, I'm going to America tomorrow night. When I went to America 25 years ago, 30 years ago, and I spoke about the yeshiva, it was very clear to people that I want to come and I just want to learn and have a good learning, and good learning, those words that people use, but I want lamdas. We're going to have lamdas. We're going to have chidushim. Where can I train myself? And they didn't say brisker. Most high school kids don't know what brisker is, but they knew what chidushim were, what lamdas is. I want to be able to be mechadesh. My sense is that in our world, at least, there's been a shift to more of a dafyomi, more of a bikiyas, more of a rashi tosfos, more of reading svarim. That's not the world that I was raised in, and we could talk about what caused it, what didn't cause it. But certainly the DNA of the yeshiva world and the Volozhin world and the world of Reb Chaim, which comes from Volozhin, and the world of the Rav and the world of Reb Lichtenstein, and by my world is, you're supposed to be Mechadish. Now, it doesn't mean that the first day in yeshiva, I just came from DRS, here's my Chidushim. It means that your goal is to not just record or register, but at some point you want to add Torah to, I mean, Rav Amital told us so many times, I don't want you to be a tape recorder. A tape recorder is those big boxes you used to put tapes in and prep. I don't want you to be a tape recorder. Now, there's great danger in Chidushim. We'll talk about Chidushim and the danger, but I still feel that in yeshiva, we're trying to push you into that space and giving chaburas and trying to, you know, what do you think the Tulsa says in a responsible way, in a way that's humble, in a way that's intellectually honest. And this is where it comes across in a Kabbalistic way. Perek Yud Beis. The Kol Shekein, let's read this together. The Kol Shekein, Chidushim Amitim D'Araisa. When you're Mechadesh, so can anyone finish the sentence in Kabbalistic logic? If Torah sustains the world, then new Torah creates new worlds. And you become a semi-creator. So if you're learning Madhva Mixus and you're just, okay, this, that, you are sustaining what already exists. We say, oh, I have an answer to tell us that no one said or whatever. I have a new way to learn this Gemara. you're creating a whole new world. Kol shekein chidushin ramitim deraisa mischatshin ma'idei adam ein aroch legodol neros niflos in yanim pulosem lamala. And here's the punchline of chidushin 102. Shekol mila v'mila pratis ha'mischadashas v'pi adam. Anytime you have a new chiddush, and again, new chiddush doesn't have to mean you're coming up with a new svar, but even if you're reading someone else's chiddush, whether you're coming up with a chiddush, you're reading Rav Chanan, kol mila v'mila pratis ha'mischadashas v'pi adam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu nashik le'im atyalei, Hashem kisses it and puts it on his crown, which is Kabbalistic imagery, v'nivna mimeno olam chadash, b'fnei atzmo, you're creating a new world. V'heinenim shamayim ha'chadashim, the pasuk in Yirmiyah, kasher shamayim ha'chadashim, there's new worlds that you're creating. Next on the line of Chol Mila Dischadish Be'araisa Yadatu Ishtadla Be'araisa. This is the Zohar. Every word, he quotes the Zohar, that you're creating in Torah. Ayadatu Ishtadla Be'araisa, that you're working in Torah. Avid Rekia Chada. There's a whole new Shemayim that's being created. Avid Rekia Chada. And just to finish, just because I want to get to Perek Yud Gimel, not only are you creating new Shemayim, but Perek Yud Gimel, the top of the next page, Nishlam Kavanasa Yisbarach B'Briya. You are completing Hashem's intention for the Briya. Chayirak Bishvil Atar Sheisasku Bo. And as Perak Yudal says, again, these are very, very short summaries. The Chol Alamas V'Briyas Kulam Heim Ad Bechedvasa Yisera V'Nenin. Hashem is happy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is happy when you create Torah. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is happy, that Simcha spreads. Again, that Simcha, like you remind Simcha, but that Bracha spreads throughout the world. So this is the core Kabbalistic description, okay? Number one, structure. Number two, Maisa Bereishis. Number three, the continuing dynamic. Number four, the role of Am Yisrael. Number five, the role of Chidushim. These five statements form the backbone of what I would say is, okay, now talking about more of our terminology, is the Yeshiva world's approach. Okay, this lent supercharged to the world of Torah. If you look back at the Yeshiva world, right, as a 220-year project, it started in 1803. So beforehand, you didn't have major yeshivas. People learned Torah. Unfortunately, the 18th century was a very difficult period. It was very, very politically difficult, very economically difficult, right after the Shabtai Tzvi. All of a sudden, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends Zev Elnagon into this world. His disciple is Reb Chaim Volozhin. Reb Chaim Volozhin based, as we would say, on the Hishtalshelus of the Elnagon. Reb Chaim Volozhin creates this concept called yeshiva, mega yeshiva. And from that, the yeshiva world sprouts. Okay, now, everyone listen to what I'm about to say. Okay, this is a major, major, dear, you got to wake up for this also, okay? This is a major, major lacuna in modern Orthodoxy. And I don't know if it's modern Orthodox people's fault. I'm not a modern Orthodox. You may see yourself that way, but whatever, the communities you grow up in, I don't know if it's your fault, if it's the Haredim fault, whatever, okay? This is us. We are part of the yeshiva world. This is our legacy. When I look at Reb Chaim Volozhin, when I look at the Chanan, when I look at the Berachah Shmuel, when I look at the Chafetz Chaim, when I look at everyone who was part of this project of the last 220 years, we are part of that. Now, did they dress a little different? Did they look different? Did some of them who actually lived during the process of Zionism oppose Zionism? Did some of them oppose? For sure. And you could very easily say, this is part of my Masorah, but at some point, certain details changed. What were some of those details? The view of Israel, the view of secular learning, the view of women, the view of the broader society. But the core DNA is the same. Our valuing of Torah, if let's say we didn't have to serve in the army, I would like to dedicate my life in this way. I would like to live every minute of Torah. Unfortunately, we have to fight a war. We have to maintain an army. Therefore, we, Baruch Hashem, it's a tremendous mitzvah. And I think it's the ideal mitzvah. At some point, modern Orthodox Jews became convinced that all those beard-wearing people who talked about the primacy of Talmud Torah and who didn't want secular studies and were opposed to Zionism when it was just this theoretical secular movement, not the state we have today, they're not our people. So if you walk into a sukkah of a Haredi person who's up on the wall, Reb Chanan and Reb Chaim and the Brisker Rav and whatever, if he's a chassid, he has a ger rabbi, the Belzer rabbi, and if you walk to modern Orthodox, well, we'll find a few rabbanim to put on our sukkah, Rav Aaron and Rav Cook and Rav Soloveitchik and a couple other people without beards. At what point did that happen? I'm concerned for you. This isn't social commentary. This is about your identity. That is going to handicap your ability, because anytime you'll read about these people, there's going to be an emotional blockade. Okay, they're not really my people. In my opinion, now this is my editorial, before I was just giving you historical fact. In my opinion, 90% of the people who are opposed to the state of Israel without seeing the state of Israel, if they woke up today, Rip Van Winkle, Choni Amakel, and they saw what happened to the state, not just how broad it's become, but also how much Torah there is in the state, they say, you know what, I'm sitting there in Poland talking about a theoretical state that not, secular Jews are leading, and those secular Jews are not just secular. Today, people are secular, they're traditional. They were anti-religious. They hated religion. They were on witch hunts against religious people. So, of course, they associated Zionism with anti-religious. And it came under the shadow of so many terrible changes in the Jewish people and Jewish community in the 19th century, conservative and reformed and Bundist. So if you're an average Talmid Chacham sitting in your local shtetl town, of course you're going to be opposed to Zionism. And of course you're going to think, because in 1920, if you went to university, you know what university was? Like this. Oh my goodness, every word my professor is saying is holy. Because there was a respect for intellectual knowledge. That was just the milieu then. Today we live in the woke environment. Anything the professor says is a joke. Anything about it 14 times. Like the bigger concern, if you read the old conversations about college, the big concerns are kfir. Today no one becomes a kofer in college because of the course. You become a kofer in college because of the environment. Because of some silly American, I hate to say this, stupidity that you have to immerse yourself in a college environment. In Toronto, you go to college and you go home for the night and you spend time with your parents and you go to shul and you go to davening and you go take your courses. It's true in Toronto, it's true in Johannesburg, it's true in Melbourne, it's true in London. You live with your parents or in the community and you go. Somehow in the American ethos, your college career is not complete unless you live on campus so you can see, I don't know, the parties, the football, I don't know why, there's no way to break it. There's no way to break it. And it's become like a runaway snowball. Because at some point, kids can no longer live with their parents at the age of, ripe old age of 20, because it's been embedded into your mind that at the age of 18 you have to leave home. There's no reason. In my family, especially with the girls, the boys are in yeshiva, the rule was, we try to maintain as best we can, that you stay in the house until you're married. That's the way it was. That's the way it should be, not just for Jews. You live in your house with your parents and your community and everything, all the values live by, and then you get married and you start your own home. It's not just a comment about college, it's a comment about singlehood in America. It's become very comfortable living as a single outside of communities where communities of singles. These are larger issues we have time to talk about today. But what really concerns me today is I want you to have the ability to look back, as I do, at all these people who may have had an opinion about Zionism is a little bit different, who may have dressed then. If any of you lived in the 19th century, you would have dressed like they will dress. Because that's how they dress, with a little black baker's hat and you know, two pairs of clothing, a long black frock. Now, what happened was a lot of changes happened. We moved to Western civilization, and Western civilization makes clothing available, and the world has accepted us. So I dress more or less in a way that's accepted in our world. And other people say, let's maintain a certain type of dress, either the Hasidic dress that preserves the old school, or the yeshivish dress that makes us feel that we're a uniform, and we're an army. Okay, so these are... All of a sudden, there's been this schism that they're not us, and we're going to find our own modern Orthodox Rabbanim. Stop it. You're shooting yourself in the legs. It's not true. These are us. These are our people. If you want to say maybe 1945, 1948 is a breaking point, because that's when the State of Israel is born. That's when the Holocaust ends, the different versions of the Holocaust. That's when, okay, so maybe you want to say that people, let's say, who lived after 1945, it's harder for me to identify when they're opposed to the State of Israel, when they're, but to go back and say that, oh, and again, I don't know if you're to blame. I think there's a lot to blame. I think the Haredim, I'll be very honest with you, and you know, I have absolutely no strife or any, I think they do a good job of appropriating. They believe, they really believe that they are the continuation of those people and you are not. And that's a message they perpetuate. I don't think they do it consciously. I don't think they do it in a way that's antagonistic to you. I think they feel like they're carrying on the tradition in a very proud way. But that is a narrative that seeps into your consciousness because you dress differently than Rabbi Chanan or the Berakha Shmuel, and you believe in the State of Israel, and you do get jobs by going to university, and all of a sudden you've become adrift. It's like cutting yourself off from all the other ships from the pier and trying to sail the ocean alone. Don't sail the ocean alone. These are our people. Rabbi Chaim is our people. So in Lakewood, they're reading the Nefesh HaChaim and saying, okay, let's say they are. We have to learn every minute because every word of Reb Chaim Volozhin we're going to apply. And Yeshivat Har Etzion, we're reading Reb Chaim and say, okay, for whatever reason we live in a world in which we can't apply this, how can we take the spirit of Reb Chaim? And that's cut across, that cuts across our entire reality. Right? I believe. All right, Targa, how can you say you're the successor to, not successor, but you're a descendant intellectually of, and you dress this way? Because I'm trying to capture the spirit, not the dress, not the shell. To me, it's like saying, who you know, if, I don't know if you guys will get this imagery, but I was very intrigued by... a band in the 90s called Oasis. Have you ever heard the band Oasis? Like, now, who's a better representation of the Beatles? You know, the washed up, overweight, middle-aged man who gets up there looking like John Lennon in a nightclub and plays John Lennon songs of the Oasis band, which captured their spirit of revolution and rebellion and spun it into a new image in the 90s. Like, so you take the spirit of what happened before you, and then you can apply it in a new context, in a new way, shape. But I feel like this is a real, real deficiency in our world. And I don't know if anyone's ever spelled it out for you, and this is a really good time to spell it out. These people are our world. And not only these people that lived before the break, but even the people after the break. We share a lot more DNA with them. Okay, it's harder because they're more contemporary, and sometimes they're not as generous in embracing us as we try to be in embracing them. But this isn't an embracing Olympics, like who's more embracing. This is about your growth and your identity. I don't care about what people are saying about me. It's the last thing on my mind. The last thing on my mind is what people think about me. Like, who cares? The most important thing on my front lobe is how I could be an Oved Hashem. And I can be an Oved Hashem because it's a team sport. And I want to join other people Oved Hashem. And we're amputating ourselves from those identification markers. And it has to stop. It has to stop. And now's a good time. I'm sorry to be so emphatic. I'm generally not emphatic. But this is really Sakanas Nefashas for you spiritually. If you think that you're going to sever yourself, not just from the... You can say, I think it's suicide intellectually to sever yourself from the yeshivish world in America. I'm going to go back and only live in Gush Rabbanim and Dati Lumi. As you know, 90% of the Torah energy in America is being provided by more of a yeshivish inflection. But let's say you say that. I can at least hear that, but you're going to cut yourself off from anyone that dressed differently and thought differently from 120 years ago? Just because they had slightly different opinions about events that have totally, totally transformed over the last 120 years, and who's to know what they would say? By the way, I'm not just talking about the Haredi world. People talk about Rav Kook. What would Rav Kook have said if he'd lived through the Holocaust? Rav Kook didn't see the Holocaust. Nor did Rav Kook see what happened when the state was actually born. He was sitting there thinking about what the state should be. And I think one of Rav Amital's major revolutions, which I'm not going to talk about right now, is that I think he wasn't just clipping and pasting things Rav Kook said into the 1980s and 1990s like a lot of his Talmidim were. He was trying to imagine how can Rav Kook's ideas be adapted to a very different world in 1980 and 1990? And that's what led to a bit of a break between him and some of the classic Rav Kook Talmidim. But he still saw himself as a disciple of Rav Kook and a Talmud of Rav Kook. So the world shifted so dramatically over the last 120, 130 years that to all of a sudden take people who lived in 1860 and play ventriloquy with them, what they would have said, about put them on your lap and make them say things you want them to say, I don't care about intellectual appropriation. I care about you being the victims of that appropriation. That's what I care about. And I want it to stop, and I want you guys to be able to broaden your horizons and to see ourselves as one large unit, and then there are different splintered groups, different streams of that Ishtal Shalom. Okay, got a little bit far afield, but really, really important rant, guys.